Continuing with our quote from John Stuart Mill, it can go on as yet, with only a, and by it can go on as yet, he's talking about these brand new, newly minted nation states, bureaucratic, centralized. It can go on as yet with only a little of the spirit of improvement, while reformers have even a remote hope of affecting their objects through the existing system. They are generally willing to bear with it. But when there is no hope at all, when the institutions themselves seem to oppose an unyielding barrier to the program of improvement, the advance of tide heaps itself up behind them till it bears them down. Unquote. The tide, says Wallerstein, that is, the European Revolution of 1848, as all such great happenings, was made up of a mixture of movements and objectives. In France, it consisted essentially of the joining together of Europe's first great proletarian insurrection with the acute discontent of the left liberals who shared John Stuart Mill's view of the conservatization of the July monarchy. Elsewhere in Europe, in states that were not as yet committed to liberalism, there were no proletarian insurrections. Rather, there were liberal uprisings combined with nationalist uprisings. Two situations with two solutions. Louis Napoleon handled the first, Palmerston the rest. The uprising of February 1848 illuminated the hopes of a social republic, a vague socialist utopia that would provide jobs to the unemployed and liberation to all those who suffered indignities and inequalities, everyone who put forward their claims, the artisans who sought to restore their privileges and their mode of production, the peasants who sought to reestablish traditional rights of collective usage, the women who sought the extension of universal suffrage to include them, the slaves who sought abolition. The pendulum was beginning to swing too far, and in June, the forces of order under General Cavaignac reined in the unruly, dangerous classes. Pitiful provisional government, cried Labrousse. It feared the social revolution as much as it did the counter-revolution. Cavaignac could repress. He could not re-legitimize the state, nor could the monarchs return. They had exhausted their credit. Into this void stepped Louis Napoleon, who sought to recreate a liberal, orderly, modern state, and who, as Zeldin put so well, was not elected because he was the candidate of the party of order, but was their candidate because they saw he was bound to win. But what did Louis Napoleon represent? He represented, first of all, the Napoleonic tradition, which combined the legacy of the French Revolution, a commitment to scientific and industrial progress, and nationalism. During the 1840s, Louis Napoleon had been a sharp critic of the July monarchy because he felt that by distancing itself from progressive liberalism, it was building on sand and would surely tumble. And unlike Guizot, he was aware that with proper safeguards, a democratic regime could be established without threatening the stability of the country. The liberals acted in 1848, just as they had in 1830. Dismayed by a regime that had become too rigid, too illiberal, they rose up and won the day. Then, dismayed by the possibility that the lower strata would be able to take advantage of the situation and push things too far, they renewed their links with the political groups they had just ousted from power because the enemy, at present, is on the left. Quote, unquote. When Louis Napoleon made his coup d'etat on December 2nd, 1851, the primary objective was to repress the left. The secondary objective was, however, to constrain the ability of conservative forces to act other than through him. One can, if one wants, emphasize the Caesarist, the so-called Bonapartist element in the regime. If one does, however, one risks missing the degree to which the outcome of the repression, which was both real and effective, was that of a centrist regime oriented to capitalist expansion, constructing a liberal compromise. One led not by a classical liberal, but by an enlightened conservative. Unquote from Emmanuel Wallerstein's The Modern World System 4, Centrist liberalism triumphant, 1789 to 1914. And I encourage everyone to read the summary of Kropotkin on these very events. I think it's an important augment to the history that Wallerstein presents in some detail. Kropotkin also is providing that rich, on the ground picture of what it meant for a strong, quote unquote, state to be the outcome of our longing to get free. He has a lot of insight on this for us to read. So please check out the PDF on that, on Kropotkin and his thoughts on the state and the economy. Thank you so much for listening. And next week we'll be returning to the conclusion of the 18th Brumaire by Karl Marx, as well as in our pre-reading commentary, thinking through what it will require for us to fully claim our right to define the future and to create a transitional movement of folk willing, eager to help realize a future defined by everyone, not by the few. Thank you so much for listening. My love goes out to you as always. And until next week, peace.
Nothing feels better than my baby's arms. They've been around me a long time. Nothing feels better than some good news. I know.